That's not the rookie contract. That's the second contract.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_b, where we're here to wrap up the games from Christmas Day and then preview the 10-game Boxing Day slate in the NBA. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it indeed. We will start where we always do at this part of the show.
Monstrous line of the night.
Yes, the monstrous line of the night goes to, of course it's him. It's James Harden of the Houston Rockets. 41, 6 and 7, 2 steals, a block, 5 triples, took 35 shots, only hit 15 of them, so that was a bit of a negative. 6 of 7 from the line. He's always going to be a monster with Chris Paul out. He's a monster with Chris Paul there, but he's a monster with Paul out, putting up big numbers. Over the last 7 games, he is averaging 40 points. 5 triples, 6.7 rebounds, 9.1 assists, and 2.4 steals on 45 and 90% shooting. They are just preposterous numbers, and he is doing a great job of carrying. I think this is about his 6th or 7th monstrous line of the night this season. A guy that saw himself drop pretty low in, or lower than he should have, I think, in some fantasy drafts, pick 5 or 6, I saw him going, which was always nonsense at the time, and that's played out that way. Harden has been ridiculous. He is entrenched in that top 2 and in very clearly, or closely in discussion for that number 1 player for the rest of the season.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night, it's also the deep league of the night because Andre Iguodala is rostered in only 5% of Yahoo leagues. He turned it on the Christmas Day ass-kicking, as it turned out to be. 27 minutes for Iguodala, 23 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists with 3 triples, 75% from the field as well. I suggest you read exactly nothing into this performance from Iguodala, but this will be surprising to you, because it was surprising to me when I saw it. Over the last month, he is the 136th ranked player, meaning he's got borderline-ish 12-team value. Where's the value coming from? What's he providing that's actually solid? Well, over that time, he's giving you a positive in steals and blocks, and his assists, in blocks and field goal percentage, and his assists and steals aren't far away. He's shooting 50% from the field over that time. He's only scoring 7 points per game, but his ability to contribute in those other areas is giving him value. He's still more of a 14, probably closer to 16 team league guy who's going through a nice little run at the moment of efficiency paired with those defensive numbers. But they are strong performances from Iguodala, and it is worth mentioning. That 5% rostered on Yahoo means he's available in lots of these deeper leagues, and he should be on 16 team rosters. He probably should be on 14-team rosters just with the way that he's played. I'd probably lean more towards 16-teamers for Iguodala, but it is worth noticing, and I think people would be surprised to see where he sits over that last month. And even the last 2 weeks where he's played under 22 minutes a night, he's the 124th ranked player, 50 and 75% boosting his numbers, the good blocks, he's hitting threes as well at a solid rate. Again, it was a bit of a surprise to me to see him that highly rated over that little stretch, and this is clearly an outlier type game for Iguodala, but the numbers have been okay. I still look at him more as that 16 team league player. Guys, make sure you are following the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On NBA Net. All the hosts into one feed on Twitter. Plus, you get Instagram stories over on Instagram. All the biggest news of the day. Transluted. That's not an actual word. Diluted. Concentrated. Concentrated. That's the word I'm looking for. Into those 60-second Instagram stories. So go follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On NBA Net. Let's move on to the next award of the day.
Young Gun of the Night.
The young gun of the night is Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. Tatum had himself a nice double-double in their overtime victory against the Philadelphia 76ers. 38 minutes for Tatum, 23 and 10. He also had 2 steals and 2 blocks. The efficiency wasn't quite there, 39% from the field, but getting to the line 9 times is great, and hitting 8 of them is fine. He's basically that same sort of level that he was last season. The scoring is up. He's the 58th ranked player. He was 72 last year. He's up to 17 points per game. The usage is up almost at 23%. The efficiency is not as good, 39%. 39%, still great, but he was a 43% three-point shooter last year. Steals and blocks are about the same. Doesn't get any assists, 1.7. Rebounds, yeah, elevated rebound numbers as he's playing more at the four this season as well, although probably been pushed back to the three now recently with Marcus Morris in that lineup. But he has taken some steps forward. It hasn't translated into huge fantasy leaps forward. I think he was always overvalued heading into the season where people were picking him in the top 40, and that never made much sense to me there. But this is about the right zone for Tatum, who's taking some incremental steps forward, but not huge leaps forward, which is expected given the return of Hayward. Not that he's been great, but it's another body there. The return of Kyrie Irving, who wasn't there when Tatum was putting up those big numbers to end last season. And the inevitable dip in some of that ludicrous efficiency that he was displaying last season. Tatum is good for that, I think 50 to 70 type range for the rest of the season, which is a great mid-round taut sort of player. And he is providing that for us at the moment. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night goes to Klay Thompson of the Golden State Warriors. Thompson was not good. I think that's a fair way of putting it against the Lakers. He played 33 minutes and had 5 points. 3 rebounds and 3 assists, no steals, no blocks, and 2 of 7 from the field. Thompson has been disappointing this season. There were people who were taking him inside the top 30 in drafts. Again, that never made any sense. He's 55 on the season, and I think that's inflated by that chunk of time that Steph Curry missed, because over the last 2 weeks, he's outside the top 110. I don't see Klay being a top 30 guy that he's been in the past, a top 40 guy that he's been in the past. I've got him outside the top 60 for the rest of the season, and maybe that's even being a bit generous. He's averaging 11 points per game over his last four. The shooting is not there for Klay. 34% shooting from three, 21% over the last 7 games. He's going to improve. Look, he is going to shoot the ball better than he has this season, and especially over this last couple of weeks. But he just doesn't do enough in the other areas, even though the steal rate is increased as well as the block rate this season. So that's, I guess, helping him there. He just doesn't do enough in those other areas to be able to go through or help to support him when he goes through these poor shooting stretches. And we're 35 games into the season. He's still shooting under 34% from three. It's a real worry. 44% from the field overall, 83% from the line without getting there all that often. It hasn't been a great year from Klay Thompson. He's providing that back end, mid-round sort of value. And the last couple of weeks have been pretty bad. And I do think there will be improvement. So maybe he was a guy who I said was a real sell high when Curry was out. And now I'm looking at him as more of a buy low, because those last 2 weeks' production is terrible. And if people are overreacting to it, you might be able to get him as a bargain. But don't look at him as a top 30, top 40, or top 50 guy. Look at him as a top 75 sort of a player. And if you can get that for top 100 value, top 120 value, then that's the sort of deal that you make. But it is really going to be dependent on how your team looks. And just with the understanding that he might not become back to that 40% three-point shooter, it's looking more and more unlikely at the moment. But I think he'll get better than 33.7% from three, which is where he currently sits, and that's obviously impacting his overall value. The plus-minus goats of the day, the best net rating went to Ivica Zubac of the Los Angeles Lakers. Another start for Zubac, and that is 3 absolute monster games in a row for him. Tyson Chandler was back, but JaVale McGee was out, and Zubac looks fantastic. He's a guy that I liked quite a bit coming over from Europe and played well in his rookie season. Really bad last season, and I started to lose a little bit of hope in him. Now, with the situation with the Lakers at the moment, McGee has been suffering from pneumonia, and that's kept him out. And when JaVale comes back, it's hard to find where they play Zubac. Will they run a 3-center rotation on a team that runs a lot of no-center lineups? Probably not. Will he take Tyson Chandler's minutes? Probably not. Will he take McGee's minutes? Also, probably not. So as well as Zubac is playing, I don't think he comes in and is even a guaranteed every-night rotation guy when JaVale is back, which could be as early as next game. So that is, he's obviously awesome at the moment, and you can grab him and hold him and see what happens from here. And it's always a name to have in the back of your head that, shit, if he gets an opportunity when one of these guys goes down, then it's going to be big time stuff. Could he? Look, I think the most likely scenario is he doesn't take Chandler or McGee's minutes, but if he's going to take one of them, it's going to be Chandler. I just don't see Walton doing that, and Zubac will likely go back to the bench and be an emergency type of player, but it's been a strong performance and something that we do have to keep in our mind if other scenarios arise, or if Walton does decide to change things up and leave McGee out of the rotation or leave Chandler out of the rotation. Two things that seem unlikely despite how well that Zubac has played. Really, really fantastic stuff from Ivica so far in these last 3 games.
LeBron James.
Injury news. The only real injury to talk about is a massive one, or a potentially massive one. LeBron James suffered a groin strain in the Lakers' big win over the Warriors. We worry when we hear groin injury. We worry when we see LeBron say, "I felt it pop." But then also the initial signs are encouraging. There doesn't appear that LeBron said the groin is intact. So we're talking about a minor strain. He's not even sure that he's going to miss any time. I would think that a game or two off for LeBron will probably happen, at least one game. But it looks like we've avoided any serious long-term issues with LeBron and his groin. If LeBron does miss, a whole bunch of guys get a boost of value. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Rajon Rondo, Josh the Hitman Hart, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, the future MVP Kyle Kuzma, all of these guys who require the ball in their hands, Ingram and Lonzo and Rondo, the guys who require usage, Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, even Josh Hart to a degree, they all get a bump. But we're talking very short term here. So you're not adding Hart, you're not adding KCP. You could consider it with Rondo, who was fantastic again today, and Lonzo's numbers were dipping, and I'm getting really worried for what Lonzo's role and minutes are going to be on this team. Yeah, Rondo might be a back-end 12-team league guy, although I'm not super convinced of that. And Ingram, if he was dropped, you add him. But again, it doesn't appear that James is going to be missing any lengthy period of time. It might be one or two games, and those guys get that inflated boost for that time. But you have to weigh up that cost-benefit analysis. Is adding Josh Hart for two games worth dropping a guy who's going to have more value than him the rest of the season? In general, no. So it's all going to be, you know, who are you dropping in this scenario to activate one of these maybe one or two game boost guys, whether that is Rondo or KCP or Hart. But we'll see if LeBron does miss time, all these rotation guys will get a significant boost if LeBron James happens to miss, which again, I'd say is probably more likely than not at this early stage. And again, it is just an early stage diagnosis. We'll get more information about that on Wednesday. Let's go into these games now, talk about them. But before I do that, I must remind you, if you guys do have a company and you are looking for a new way to reach advertisers, you can do that by advertising on this podcast. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the companies that they hear sponsor their favorite shows. We are 98% male demographic, higher educated and higher earning than your traditional media audiences. So email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com if you're looking to get your company heard from right now. The first game on Christmas was the Milwaukee Bucks. They handed it to the New York Knicks. No surprise there. 109-95. Giannis had 30 and 14 with 4 steals and 2 blocks. Of course, the free throws, still a real concern there. 4 of 7 from the line. While Malcolm Brogdon returned from that rest, only 27 minutes because he didn't need to play that much more. 17-6-4 with 3 steals. And Brook Lopez, 20 points with 2 blocks. His minutes had been trending down recently, Lopez. So it's good to see that playing time jump back up. 28 minutes from George Hill continues to be frustrating. He does nothing from a fantasy point of view, but it is limiting Eric Bledsoe, who still had 11-6-5. It's not necessarily that I'm worried about Bledsoe, because again, it was a blowout and a lot of guys saw their minutes limited, including Chris Middleton, who played just 29. But it's an interesting thing just to keep an eye on. Middleton continues to suck in his shooting. 2 of 12 for 6 points, 6 rebounds and 3 assists. This is a significant buy low to me. I think the finger is bothering him. He's had issues all season. I think he will bounce back. He may not bounce back to a top 30 guy, but he's going to be better than what he currently is, and I think that makes him a nice buy low player. On to the Knicks, Noah Vonleh. 33 minutes for Vonleh. A big performance, 14 and 15 with 2 blocks. Now, we look at this and we go, well, Vonleh's a must-add player, and that's based on that. Yes, of course he is, but his recent performances don't necessarily tell you that. Over the last 2 weeks, he's the 140th ranked player. 9 and 10 in 31 minutes because he's shooting 40% from the field. Now, that's obviously quite low, but his numbers this season, his efficiency is well up. He was at 51 true shooting last season. He's at 57 this season. So he's been quite elevated there. Now, the block numbers are way up. He was at 0.3 per game last season. Now he's at 0.9 per game. So a jump in the rate there as well, almost double in his block rate. So some big increases from Vonleh. He can be a back-end 12-team leaguer. I don't think that his upside is all that high. I think he can be a Derek Favors-ish type of guy, a guy that provides top 120 value without pushing into the top 80. And that can be okay in certain teams and on certain situations. He's available in 53% of Yahoo leagues, so he's around in 12-teamers, and he can have some value there. The Fort, Kevin Knox, 21 points on 20 shots, his usual inefficiency, 6 rebounds and 3 assists. He is a must-roster player, in my opinion, but you do have to understand that there's going to be no defense and there's going to be lack of efficiency. Well, Emmanuel Mudiay, 34 minutes, 11, 3, and 5. He was shooting at like 50% over the last month. That was never going to stick, in my opinion. It's probably not going to stick at 36% like he was in this game, but he is a 12-team league guy. While Tim Hardaway's efficiency is really poor, 4 of 18, 14 and 10, he's still a must-roster guy. Interestingly, Frank Ntilikina out of the rotation again. I do not understand David Fizdale's coaching decisions. Oh, Frank was struggling, so we decided to not play him and get him through his struggles. How does he get better by not playing? I'll never understand. You're getting your ass kicked every single game. So now Trey Burke comes back in, and he's shit as well. 2-4-2 in 14 minutes. I do think that the Knicks are out on Ntilikina. They are just chopping and changing every 5 minutes with this team. And people, whenever I say this, people push back, oh man, how else is he supposed to know what he's got in his players if he doesn't rotate them and try all these lineups? Well, I know what you've got in Trey Burke, a not good player. Why are you playing him? What's the point in it? Let's see what you've got from Ntilikina, who's played, what, 90 career games, maybe? 80 career games? Let's see what he can do after you invested a top 10 pick in him last season. Yes, a different general manager, but let's see what he can do. And let's let him play through his struggles. You're contributing to players' poor confidence where, oh shit, if I have a few bad games in a row, I'm just not going to play anymore. Like, how does that help anyone? Whoever, maybe there's some people, whoever does things better when they're stressed or when they're worried or when they can't focus on what they're doing because they're too worried about what their future's going to be? Like, who performs better in that scenario? My answer is nobody. There is no consistency with what this bloke is doing. Fizdale. Anyway, Alonzo Trier was back. He had 8 points in 18 minutes, and Damo Dotson had 2 points in his 19 minutes. They flirted with 12-team value at times, but there's absolutely no consistency there. And with Knox getting 30-plus minutes a night, they're not going to be 12-team league guys, or probably 14-team league guys for the majority of this season. Let's go on to the next game from Christmas. We're looking at the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets. The Beatle, Paul George, had 28 and 14 with 3 steals. Inefficient, but still a great line. While Russell Westbrook, speaking of inefficient, 22, 9 and 9 with 4 steals. 30% on 20 attempts is horrible. 7 of 10 from the line is an improvement, but it's still bad. And again, he just murders your percentages. Well, Jeremy Grant really brought it. 2 steals and 3 blocks to go with 15 points and 9 rebounds. He has been a surprise, to be sure, in fact.
A surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one.
Yes, he's been really upped his game, increased his shooting, the block rate's been solid, he's getting a lot of minutes, he's been very, very good, and he is a 12-team league guy. Steve Adams, 17-7, while Schroeder played a lot of minutes, 34 minutes, 10-5-6, he's real borderline to me at the moment. In 10-teamers, I think you can get rid of him. In 12-teamers, I think he's a guy that you just hold at this point and see exactly where we go. But my confidence in him is dropping pretty quickly. For the Rockets, Clint Capella sent a Christmas Day record with 23 rebounds, 16 points of steal and a block. Well, Eric Gordon, he is a must-roster player for as long as Chris Paul is out. 17-6-4, a steal and a block. Austin Rivers recently signed in the rotation and played 31 minutes. Brandon Knight, out of the rotation. Carter Williams can't play at all. Daniel House, who started, played 25 minutes, and Gerald Green played 20. So Rivers is going to get 30 minutes a night. Now, that doesn't mean he's a 12-team league guy, as we saw here. 10 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. It's a lot of minutes, but this guy takes a lot of minutes and a lot of usage to return fantasy value. He's more of a 14- or 16-team league guy in this Chris Paul absence period, and that's really about it. As for House, he hit 2 triples, he had a steal and a block. He's a nice, deep league guy, while Gerald Green has a marginal level of value for that 3-point streaming in deeper formats as well. PJ Tucker with his 11-7 was okay without being spectacular. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics win in overtime, 121-114. Embiid had 34-16. It really helped that Aaron Baines was out, because Baines does have quite a good record in guarding him. Jim Butler had 24-5-4 with 3 steals, while Benny Simmons had 11-14-8. Far from Simmons' best game, and those free throws were a real issue. JJ Redick, I did talk about him in the buy low, sell high pod I did earlier today. In terms of his shooting, and he struggled again here, 5 of 16. Could be a little bit of a buy low with his shooting dropping off, but he is quite old, and maybe we're just not at that stage where Redick is going to be that hyper-efficient player anymore. Timothy John McConnell had 7 assists and a steal. He's a good assist and steals streamer, while Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, one of his better games, 15-5-3, but still more just a 12-team league player than anything else. For the Celtics, Kyrie was fantastic, 40-10 with 5 triples. Marcus Morris continues to be excellent. His efficiency is through the roof. I think it's going to dip, but again, we're 30-plus games into the season here, and he's keeping it going. 23-6-3 with 3 threes. He is a 12-team league guy, but if you could sell high for any top 60 player, I would. And Marcus Smart, not his best game, 6-4-3, but still a steal, still three assists, still has some 12-team value, while Jaylen Brown played only 20 minutes, and of course, you don't have him in 12-team leagues, although Marcus Smart is rostered in fewer leagues than Jaylen Brown is, and that's something that needs to be corrected. Al Horford had a 25-minute limit, he played 30, 4-9-5, but it's good to have him back. While Gordon Hayward, the struggles continue, 5 points in 28 minutes. I think that he is a 10-team drop. I think it's getting close to being a 12-team drop, and if you're bottom area of the standings, you might have to do it. Now, I'd explore trades to try and get something back that's better than what is on the waiver wire, but if you can't, I just worry that it's just not coming back. On a crowded team, we thought someone was going to suffer on this team. We didn't think it necessarily was going to be Hayward, but the combination of him, you know, fitting in with the team, coming back from injury, has impacted him in a massive, massive way, and it might come good. But I thought it would come good in December. I was wrong. Maybe it's February. I don't know. I think we're looking to move on from Hayward in a lot of different formats. And that's unfortunate because he's a bloke who's been fantastic from a fantasy point of view over the years. Next up, we look at the blowout victory from the Lakers over the Warriors, 127-101. Talked about Zubats already, but just a quickie on his stat line, 18-11 with 2 blocks on 9 of 10 shooting. So, of course, he's going about 80% from the field over the last couple. That won't stick. While when LeBron went down, Rajon Rondo stepped up, 15-5-10 for Rondo in 23 minutes. That's very good. Those assists alone can provide 12-team league value. I don't think he's a must-roster guy, but this was a strong performance. While the hitman Josh Hart had 12 points in 29 minutes. On the bad side, Lonzo Ball, only 24 minutes, 6-3-4. Still think he's used suboptimally, but you can't really argue with how the game went in terms of results. Well, Lance Stephenson had 11 points in 11 minutes, and the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had 19-6. A quick check-in on Brandon Ingram, 14-2-2 in 24 minutes. Foul trouble did limit him, but still not a great performance from Ingram. He'll get a boost with LeBron out, or if LeBron is out. But he is, when everything settles down, he's a fringe 10-team league guy. He's not a must-roster 10-team league player, in my opinion. On to the Warriors. Durant had 21-7-7, and Draymond, 4-5-5 with 3 steals. He just is not a good fantasy player, really, that anymore. He's not that top 20 guy anymore because a lot of those peripheral numbers have dropped. He's not hitting shots. He is struggling significantly. At the moment, he's one of those guys that, you know, given his advancing age, he's older than maybe you might anticipate. He's not that old, but he's not that young either. And the drop-off for him, I feel like it could come in a hurry. So there's a real worry there. Steph Curry couldn't hit shit in this shot in this game. 15 points on 17 shots with 5 assists. Let's just chalk it up to a bad night and he'll get better. While Kevon Looney moved back into the starting lineup, replacing Yunus Jarepko. 10-5 for Looney, one of his better games in 27 minutes, but he is just a deeper league guy with the imminent return, or semi-imminent, partially imminent return of DeMarcus Cousins. As for Jarepko, he was terrible. 2 points in 12 minutes for him. The last game of the Christmas Day was the Portland Trail Blazers. They got blown out by the Jazz, 117-96. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He hit his shots. He was 3 of 6 from the field, 11 points, 7 rebounds, 3 steals and 2 threes. He's all over the place. We know that. He can be a 12-team league guy, but he isn't always. Damo Lillard had 20 points with 5 rebounds and 4 assists, while CJ McCollum, like Klay Thompson, a guy that I was significantly down on heading into the season, I didn't expect it to be have as much struggle as what they've had so far this season, but he was poor again. 11 points on 14 shots, 3 rebounds and 3 assists for CJ, the 77th ranked player this season, 86th over the last month. This is a guy that's had 2 top 35 finishes over the last 3 seasons, and the drop-off has been pretty significant. The efficiency's not quite there. His free throws have dropped off under 78 over the last month. Over the last 2 months of action, the assists have dried up significantly. I don't see him getting back to being a top 50 player. Nurkic had 7-10. Seth Curry hit a couple of threes. It was a pretty miserable-looking box score from a Portland perspective. While Mo Harkless, he's a long way from 12-team value to me. Now, the Blazers still have 3 games left this week, so that can give you some streamability with him or with Seth or with Zach Collins or guys like that, but overall, their value is limited to deeper formats. For the Jazz, Gobert was fantastic, 18-14 with 7 blocks, while ravishing Rick Rubio, 14-3-6 with 2 steals and a block, a great all-round performance there. While the buy-low window on Jingle and Joe has closed, 15-7-5 for Ingles. Kyle Korver hit a couple of triples, while we got good Dante Exum in this one, 15-2-4. Just shows those flashes where you go, oh shit, he could be something, and then goes back to nothing. But still holding out that little bit of hope. Exum's rostered in 1% of leagues, so 20 team is, I'd take a flyer on that just in case something goes down. Derek Favors only the 19 minutes, 7 and 10. He's still that fringe 12 team league guy, while the Donovan Mitchell, just brutal from the line, 1 of 4. He was also only 8 of 18 from the field, but still the nice counting stats, 19, 2 and 2 with a steal. He's going to have to turn it around at some point, especially the shooting numbers. And he's still providing okay value, but has gone nowhere near taking that step forward that we thought he might be able to do heading into this season, which has been a little bit disappointing in that regard. Let's go on now to talk some DFS action. We'll go through the perfect lineups on DraftKings. Kyrie, Andre Iguodala, Giannis, Tatum, Capella, Rondo, Noah Vonleh, and Zubats for a total of $380.25, and that cost $49,600. And then on FanDuel, Kyrie, McConnell, Brogdon, Iguodala, Antetokounmpo, the Beatle, Paul George, Jeremy Grant, Jason Tatum, and Zubats for a total of $401, and that cost the full $60,000. All right, let's look at these 10 games we've got for Wednesday in the NBA. Boxing Day, for those of you who aren't in the United States, is the 26th of December. We're going to be focusing on DraftKings pricing for today. The first game we look at is the Phoenix Suns. They're taking on the Orlando Magic in Orlando. The Magic are 4-point favorites, and the total is 208.5. The Suns are looking much better since Devin Booker returned and since that trade went down, and opening up more minutes for guys like McCall Bridges, Joshie Jackson, and Kelly Oubre coming in. They are looking a lot better with DeAndre Ayton stepping up in that time frame as well. For the point guards in this one, DJ Augustin is at 4,200 for the Magic. His numbers recently haven't been great, but he does have 30-point upside. The matchup's not a terrible one, although D'Anthony Melton's quite good defensively. I wouldn't say that Augustin is a must-roster guy, but he's got a level of appeal. While Jaren Grant did cut into his playing time last time, 26 minutes versus 22, I wouldn't be looking too closely at Jaren. And D'Anthony Melton, a $3,500 guy, just not getting the minutes anymore with Booker back, so hard to rely upon him too much. Booker is a point guard and shooting guard eligible player on DraftKings, $8,500 for him. You know, no reason he can't be a 40-point guy here. I think there are better options out there than Booker, but he's not a terrible option to have a look at in this one. At the shooting guard, small forward type positions, we've got Terry Ross and Evan Fournier. For the Magic, 58 for Fournier, 42 for Ross. I feel much more comfortable with Fournier. I think he can be a good cash option in this really positive matchup for him. Ross, I'm not so certain. That'd be more for tournaments. And then you got Oubre at 4,600, who just isn't a good fantasy point accumulator. He is averaging 24 over the last three, but it's taken him 29 minutes to get there, and 24 points is still not a great return at 4,600, so I'm not super interested there. McCall Bridges at 42. I think he's got a decent upside. He had 30 points last game on the back of some defensive numbers, but I wouldn't be looking too closely at him. Johnny Isaacs at 3,900. He's just a GPP guy with his ability to rack up steals and blocks, but they don't come consistently enough to rely upon him, while Aaron Gordon at 6,900.
Giggity!
Has a really good record against the Suns, 45 over his last three. The shot just hasn't been falling really though for Gordo of late, and that's limiting what he can do. I'd only be really interested in tournaments, while Tony Warren Jr. is at 6,100, who's been really strong. I think that's a fairly strong price for Warren, and I'd be happy to use him in cash and in tournaments. Joshie Jackson, probably fade that. The big man, you're looking at Vooch at 8,900. He was terrible last time out, only 17 points in 29 minutes. But this is a guy who gives you 45 almost every night, and it is a super positive matchup for him. So I look for Vucevic to get back on track here. I think he's one of the best plays of the day. Good matchup, solid price drop as well, $400 from last time. I love this one for Vucevic. You got Mo Bamba at 39.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I just don't see it for him, even though the matchup is a positive one. While DeAndre Ayton's salary has been bumped up to 7,800, and that's because he's playing really well. Now, the Magic do allow opposition centers to put up good numbers. Ayton's on a streak here of 54 average over the last three and 48 over his last five. And at 7,800, those numbers would work pretty well. He's shooting an extraordinarily high field goal percentage in those games, and that's boosting his numbers somewhat, but he's not a terrible option to use here at that $7,800 price tag. Over on FanDuel, have a look. We've got Vooch at 8,900 again, a really strong option. I like Fournier at 57. Aaron Gordon comes in at 7,000, and that's not a bad one to have a look at over on FanDuel as well, given the way the other pricing goes around. Not a lot else there. Maybe Oubre at 49 you could consider for tournaments, and the 8,200 for DeAndre Ayton is probably just a little bit too high. But again, he is averaging 47 FanDuel points over his last five. So there is some value in DeAndre Ayton at that sort of a price tag on FanDuel. Again, we have to always compare it to the prices of the other guys who are around. Next up, we look at the Washington Wizards and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are 5-point favorites. The total is 221.5. We know Trevor Ariza has been on a real roll for the Washington Wizards since arriving outside of the last game where he was pretty poor. He's got an opportunity to keep that going here. At point guard, Johnny Wall on DraftKings is down to 8,600. He's done very well against Detroit with a 40, almost 45-point average the last three times out. That salary's, you know, pretty okay, but he has been quite up and down. Consistency hasn't quite been there with John. I'd look at him more for tournaments than cash, but it's not a bad matchup for him. While Reggie Jackson at 54, I'm not sure Jackson really has a massive upside, but I think that getting 25 or 27 points out of Jacko at that 5,400 price tag is not a bad one to have a look at. So I think that he could come into play. Calderon, Satoransky, the Shark, Bruce Brown. Baby Shark, Chase and Randall, nothing to see there. Reggie Bullock's at 47. He really is just a tournament guy, but I wouldn't be looking at that too strongly. The Duck, Luke Kennard, Langston Galloway, no interest there. Brad Beal at 8,000. Now, he struggled last game, just 22 points in 24 minutes, but that was the back-to-back after the triple overtime, so I'm not reading too much into that for Bealo. I do think that he can come out and be a 40-point guy, and that gives him enough value there. Jeff Green at 4,200.
My name is Jeff.
Otto Porter is out again, so Green has an opportunity to give you another 25 to 26 points. I think he's a relatively strong play last game. It's really hard to read too much into the Wizards last game given the status of the coming off that triple overtime. While Trevor Ariza at 54, only 16 last game, but again, a pass for that last performance. His last couple before that were really strong. Small forwards do get limited against the Pistons for whatever reason. They're one of the hardest teams for small forwards to put points up against of late. 5,400 for Ariza. I'm not super invested in it in cash, though. The big man, I love Griffin at 9,000. I like Drummo at 9,200. Andre Drummond averages 59 against the Wizards the last three times out. He should have a real big opportunity. I like both of those guys in cash and in tournaments. Markieff Morris at 4,500. Got back on track last game despite the hangover effect of that triple overtime. Not that it really bothered Markieff because he fouled out in that game. He had 28 points in 25 minutes. I think that he is an okay tournament guy, but okay cash guy, more for tournaments. Well, Tom Bryant at 4,000 came back to earth in that second half of the back-to-back, only 20 points after going for a career high in that first triple overtime game. At 4,000, he is more of a GPP guy, but that's really about it. Nothing super interesting to look at with Thomas Bryant. I don't think he's a lock by any means. On FanDuel, similar sort of thing. I like Drummond, I like Griffin. Johnny Wall at 97, that's a big, big price tag for John, but he does have the ability to go for 50, which makes him a tournament player. I like Reggie Jackson at 55, and I like Markieff at 49. They come in as relatively strong FanDuel plays given the matchups. Next up, we look at the Charlotte Hornets and the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are 2-point favorites here. The total is 220.5. The Nets are one of the hottest teams in the NBA. I think they've won six of their last seven, something along those lines, putting up some really, really big numbers. The old Brooklyn Nets. Injury-wise in this game, no statuses that we need to check on. Alan Crabb has been ruled out of this one, so that gives more minutes to Rowdy Rodion's Kuroks. At point guard, Kemba Walker, 8,400. There's a ton of value in this matchup, and it's a close spread game, so there is some stackable value here. Kemba's at 8,400. His shot hasn't been there, but he's still averaging 43 over the last three. 36 over the last five, though, so that's a little bit concerning. I do think there are better options than Kemba out there, but he's got that 55, 56-point upside, maybe even higher, 70-point upside, which makes him an attractive tournament player. D'Angelo Russell's at 7,500. I don't really like that pricing for him on DraftKings. There is some upside in his price, and he's been putting up some strong numbers, but I think there's an element of risk there. While Spencer Dinwiddie at $7,000, well, he's giving you 35 a night at the moment. You know, the shooting is really good. There is an element of risk that could drop off with Spence, but the matchup's a positive one, and I don't completely dislike him here. I just wouldn't have him in my must-roster guys. On the wing, you got Smokin' Joe Harris at 4,700. Numbers recently have been a little bit muted, but his lowest score is 21, so that's a solid floor for cash. It's a positive matchup, so I do like Joe Harris there. Well, Jeremy Lamb's at 5,500. The shot for him hasn't been cracking, but he's also been putting up pretty solid numbers, and I think that is, for cash, a really strong play. Batum I would fade pretty aggressively. Miles Bridges not really interested there. Rowdy Rodions at 4,600. He's averaging 28 the last three. No Crab again. So no reason for me. No reason for me to think that isn't a good play again for Rowdy at 4,600. I'm happy to get on board there. Kid Gilchrist, not really happening. Marvin Williams at 5,100. Really a terrible game from him last time. Only 9 DraftKings points. But before that, he was putting them up. No reason to completely fade Williams, but he can be a little bit hit or miss. Damari Carroll is a complete fade, I think. For the big man, Bill Hernan Gomez at 3,700. He played 23 minutes last game and put up 39 points. And that's 2 games in a row where he's played 20-plus minutes. So that makes him in a very, very positive matchup, a tournament guy. Because if he gets 20 minutes, he'll break through that $3,700 price barrier pretty comfortably. Cody Zeller at 44. I wouldn't be caring too much there. Well, Jarrett Allen's at 56. And he's not wowing us, Jarrett, but he's still getting 27, 28 points, which at 5,600 is a pretty bloody good floor. And then he could go higher than that and put up bigger numbers. So I like Jarrett here. Hollis Jefferson, center eligible on DraftKings. You wouldn't want to use him anyway, I don't think, with how inconsistent and low upside he has been. On FanDuel, I like Kurucs. I like Smoke and Joe Harris. I like Kurucs a lot at 4,000, actually. D'Angelo Russell comes in at 6,900.
Giggity!
I really like him here. And Bill Hernan Gomez, the same story, 4,900 with some upside. Jarrett Allen at 63 comes in relatively okay. And Dinwiddie at 6,900 also looks pretty good over on FanDuel. Next up, we look at the Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks. The Pacers are 8-point favorites. The total is 217.5. The Atlanta Hawks are dealing with some injuries. Dwayne Dedmon's probable, but they've got the Baptist John Collins and Alex Len, who are both questionable. Now, last game with Collins out, Len started next to Dedmon, but if both of those guys out, we probably get Vince Carter back in there and some minutes for Alex Poitras as well. The Wizard Amari Spellman, who would have been an option, he is doubtful, so he's not likely to play. That's what doubtful means. Indiana, Tyreek Evans is questionable. If he is out, his minutes just go straight to Aaron Holiday. It's not going to have really too much of a DFS impact, I don't think. At point guard, I like Trae Young on DraftKings. He's down at 5,900. He's got that 60-point upside. It is a negative-type matchup here for Trae, but even though he hasn't been great of late, he's still averaging 30 points over the last 5, so that's a relatively solid type of floor. While Collison at 43, I'm not interested there. Jeremy Lamb at 38, not Lamb, sorry, Lynn at 3,800. Yeah, not bad. He's averaging just under 22 points in the last 3, which is clearly value at that salary. He's more just a GPP guy. While Oladipo at 8,700 hasn't been able to get back to that level, it is a good matchup for him, and that would be the only reason I'd consider him, but it would only be for tournaments. On the wing, Kevin Huerta's at 4,400. I like him in standard leagues, in category leagues. DFS at 4,400. I think he's okay, but it's not the best play out there. I think he'd look better in other directions. And Kent Bazemore at 57. His floor, well, his lowest score in his last 5 has been 29. And at 5,700, that is an absolute no-brainer cash play to me, despite the negative matchup. While Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,200, I think he has got a strong cash floor as well. It's a pretty cheap price for Bogdanovic. Vince Carter, for some reason listed as a shooting guard, could be the starting power forward in this game. He had a weird 31-point game in 28 minutes last game, and at 3,300, he could be a weird tournament differentiator if both Collins and Len are ruled out. He's someone to keep in mind there. And then your small forward options, the Deuce Young's at 5,600. I'm not looking at him as a real upside guy, but I think for cash, that floor is relatively solid for Young. Dougie McDirt, not interested. For the big man, the Baptist, John Collins, 7,600. Well, when he's playing, he's giving you 40+. If he is in, then I am in on him. And Dwayne Dedmon at 52, I'm in on that anyway. But if Collins and Len are both out, then Dedmon's value skyrockets. He is averaging 32 over the last 5, and he's at 5,200. It's almost impossible to go past that, in my opinion. Although the Pacers' big men can be a negative when you go up against them. Sabonis is at 6,200, a relatively positive matchup for Sabonis. I'm not really sure I see the massive upside, though, in DeMontis, while Miles Turner is up to $8,000 because he's blocking like 5 shots a game, so that's why his value is going up, averaging 46 DraftKings points his last 3. I am a little bit hesitant to use Miles Turner at an $8,000 price tag, but with the way he's playing, he's getting that value back pretty much every game. So you can have, I guess, some level of confidence in him. I'm not ready to say that he's a lock or anything along those lines. On FanDuel, you know, Collins at 8,300 would be appealing if he is ready to go. And then if he is out, then you look at The Undertaker at 6,200. But that price is nowhere near as appealing as where Dedmon sits over on DraftKings. I like Thad Young at 59, Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,000, and Oladipo at 85 is a much more appealing play on FanDuel than he is on DraftKings. Next up, we look through the next game. It is the Toronto Raptors and the Miami Heat. No spread or total for this one. Kawhi missed last game. He'll be back in this one. And Serge Ibaka is playing as well. So on the Miami side of things, we know Dragic is out, but no other injuries to really talk about. Scooter Magruder missed last game with an illness, but he's not even listed on the injury report. At point guard, Kyle Lowry is at 7,600. He had that terrible slump. He's back on track, averaging 46 over his last three. I think he's a strong option here. Well, Justice Winslow at 55. With Magruder back, does Winslow lose a couple of minutes? I think that's a possibility. He had a monster last game, 46 points, but he's as inconsistent as they come, and I would only look at Winslow as a tournament guy. Dwayne Wade's at 51, not happening for me. Van Vliet at 5,900 is too expensive, and Tyler Johnson at 56. Good game with Winslow out, bad game with everyone healthy, good game with Magruder out. So if everyone's healthy, where does TJ fit? It's a little bit hard to have any reliability with him. It's a negative matchup for him, matchup-wise, in terms of who the opponent is. At 5,600, it's a big price tag. I would fade Tyler Johnson personally. I like Joshie Richardson always, but at 6,700, I'm in on him here. His lowest score in his last five has been 30 points, so that's a pretty strong play there. Dan Green's at 42. He's only for tournaments. Magruder, I'm not really keen on using him. Deion Waiters has been ruled out also. Jimmy Johnson at 3,700. Hopefully he can make us proud again. His numbers have been strong lately. 22 average over the last five, but 26 over the last three. The minutes are pushing up. The production's pushing up at 3,700, which is very, very close to minimum. I don't really think that that's a terrible situation to have a look at. I think it's a pretty bloody good one to look at James Johnson at that sort of salary. And then you got the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
He's at 9,500. Happy, I love it in cash, and I think it's a good tournament option as well. The Jedi OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He's at 3,600, not really keen there. Well, Derek Jones Jr.'s had some moments at 4,600. It's too high for a guy who's as inconsistent as he is. Serge Ibaka looks like he's going to play 5,700. Could be not a great matchup for him against Whiteside. I'd fade that one. While Whiteside at 6,600, the minutes have been up, 28 in the last two for Hassan. I think that salary is probably just a little bit too high. Kelly Olynyk at 44 and Bam Bam Adebayo at 44 as well.
Bam Bam!
Thinking either of those guys are great options. While Pascal Siakam at 6,500, been really putting up big numbers with Ibaka out. Look, I'm not sure 6,500 is a great price tag with Serge back. He'd be more of a tournament 40-point upside type of a guy. And for as well as Siakam's played, his highest DraftKings score for the season is just 44 points. So he's not a massive upside guy. And I just think that that salary might be just pushing it a little bit too high for Siakam. On FanDuel, I like Jim Johnson at 4,400 here. Joshie Richardson at 73. Winslow at 55 also comes in strong. Leonard and Lowry at 10,4 and 8,4 respectively. I'd happily use Kawhi. 84 for Lowry feels a little bit too high. Not the greatest option for me to go to. And the 74 for Siakam also comes out pretty aggressive. The next one we look at, we've got the Minnesota Timberwolves against the Chicago Bulls. No spread or total in this one. Jeff Teague is out. For the Wolves, Zach LaVine has been upgraded to questionable, while Derrick Rose is questionable also for Minnesota. Of course, if Rose is out, Tyus Jones gets the start, and you get more value going to guys like Josh Okogie. You got Jared Bayless coming off the bench. Andy Wiggins gets way more usage, as should Towns in that scenario. If LaVine is out, you get Ryan Arcicakano, Justin Holiday, Chris Dunn, Lowry Markin, and all those guys get a boost. For the point guards, LaVine is 7,100. That's a pretty nice price for LaVine over on DraftKings. His numbers had been suffering a little bit before that, averaging just 27 over the last three. I think he's more tournaments. Well done at 7,400. Big numbers without LaVine. I worry a little bit if Zach comes back that he can get to that level. If LaVine is out, I love Dunn, though, at 7,400. And Rose at 6,800 would be more tournament to me, battling with that sore ankle. Arcicakano at 4,000 would be an interesting GPP sort of a player. Same with Tyus Jones at 47, although that is probably a little bit too high for Tyus, even if Derrick Rose is out. Justin Holiday, 5,300, back on track at the moment. I think he's a relatively safe cash guy who gets a boost. If LaVine is out, I like the matchup for him as well. Okogie's at 45. That maybe is a little bit too high. I think he comes in as a better option on other DFS sites rather than DraftKings. And then you got Wigo at 6,200. That's a good price for Wiggins. 44 points last game. If Rose is out, I think that's a real cash option for Wigo. Chandler Hutchison's a minimum salary guy who played 32 minutes last game. Now, before you get too excited, he scored 12 points. So that's not a great return, but there could be a weird GPP play there for him. While Bob Covington's at 6,600. I think just a little bit too high. The production has dipped for Covington of late. For the big men, Wendell Carter Jr.'s at 47. Impossible to use him in cash. He's just not playing enough. He's averaging under 20 points the last three. It would just be for tournaments. While Šarić at 48. It was looking encouraging. And then Thibodeau played Taj Gibson more than Šarić the last couple. So hard to utilize him. While Townsy at 9,400 hasn't been at the same level that we've needed him to. 33 over the last three. But centers against the Bulls is always a huge boost. I like Towns here, and if Rose is out, it could be even better. Gibson, Jeng, Robin Lopez, I don't really see any of those guys being great DFS plays. On FanDuel, Okogie at 3,600. I really, really like that one. Townsy at 91 is strong. Justin Holiday at 56 is strong as well. Levine at 79, it would be tournament and done. The same story. If Levine is out, I think he does become a cash play there. Next up, the Cleveland Cavaliers traveling to take on the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are 10.5-point favorites. The total is a ridiculously low, 196.5. This has all the makings of a stay-away game. High spread, low total. Injury-wise, Joakim Noah is questionable for Memphis, and then you've got Dylan Brooks, Mike Conley, Jermichael Green, Omri Caspery, and Javon Carter all listed as probable, so they're all assuming to play. If Noah is out, it's a little bit of a boost to someone like Jermichael Green, Jaren Jackson, and Marc Gasol, with Ivan Rabb potentially getting some more minutes there. At point guard, Mike Conley's at 7,700. I really, really like Conley here. It's a great matchup for him. The only risk, I guess, you have is the spread if it's a blowout and he gets limited. But he should be putting up 40 in this matchup against the Cavs. While Kyle Anderson at 46, that's a pretty strong cash play. Should be looking at around 30-ish points for Kyle Anderson. Jordy Clarkson at 57 has been putting up nice category type of numbers. The DFS numbers at that salary aren't perfect, but I think that he can be used. Alec Burks at 46 with David Nwaba and Rocket Rodney Hood both ruled out. You can look at Burks as a GPP guy. While Colin Sexton, the young bull, he's been terrible. 4,700 for Sexton, averaging under 20 the last five. If you're going to use him, it's only going to be for tournaments, but he cannot get anything going at the moment. At shooting guard, Garrett Temple's had two big games in a row. He's at 4,500. He's averaging 28 over the last three. I just feel that going with Temple and hoping for him to ride that streak out is probably not the greatest idea, and I wouldn't be doing it. Dylan Brooks, not in his second game back from injury. For the wings, Chetty Osman's at 42. A strong game from Chetty last time, but we can't trust him, and it is a terribly negative matchup. Jerome Blossom game at 3,500. Played 22 minutes for 4 points. But again, with Nwaba and Hood both ruled out, I think we're going to have to see Osman push down to the three and Blossom game starting at the four, and that gives him maybe some sneaky tournament type of value. And then you look to the big man, Jermichael Green at 4,000, 28 points last game for Jermichael. I like that. Even if Jackson does get into foul trouble, that's low enough to consider Jermichael an option. You've got Gasol at 7,400, who's not shooting well, but still putting up decent enough fantasy value, so I think that he is an option at that sort of a salary. You got Larry Nance, who's crushing it. He's at 71. I like Nance there. And Jaren Jackson Jr., Triple J at 5,800. Despite some of the foul issues and the nonsense coaching, he is averaging 34 in the last three, and that 39-pointer for him against the Lakers was fantastic. I think he's still more tournaments because there is some unreliability in the playing time, unfortunately. On FanDuel, I like Clarkson a lot at 54. I like Conley at 86. I like Nance at 73. Blossom game, Osman, there's some tournament guys. Kyle Anderson is a cash play, but not really a tournament guy at 5,700. Sexton at 47 and Burks at 47 are both GPP guys. Well, Jermichael Green, not as appealing on FanDuel as he comes in at 4,700. Let's go on to the next game. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Dallas Mavericks. Nick Mirotic has been ruled out for the Pelicans. For the Mavericks, you've got Dennis Smith Jr. and Wesley Matthews both questionable, while Dirk Nowitzki and JJ Barea are both probable. Of course, if Matthews and Smith are out, you're going to get a boost for the burner, Jalen Brunson, JJ Barea, Devin Harris, and Dorian Finney-Smith. The only guy I'd really be keen on there is perhaps Barea and maybe Brunson for GPP type of scenarios. For point guard, Smith is at $5,000 coming back from that wrist. He's always played well against the Pelicans. He could be a sneaky GPP guy if he's ready to go. I like Drew at 88. Nothing really too controversial there. And the 48 for JJ Barea takes me away from him unless Smith is out. And even then, I wouldn't be super into it. Timmy Frazier got back on track last game. 23 minutes, but that was because he was limited with fouls. He's at 4,400. I wouldn't be locking him in by any means. But I do think that he can be a GPP upside guy. Wesley Matthews is at 44. He's a tournament upside player. Etuan Moore, not interested in him. And Luka Doncic, 8,300. He's giving you 47 a game over the last five. If Smith is out, I'm in on Luka. If Smith is in, I'd probably fade him at that elevated price tag. Any wing options here? We've got the pencil Harrison Barnes at 6,000. He is... He's probably a little bit too high at that salary. He just doesn't do enough in the other categories to give you faith in a good floor. He maybe is more tournament than anything else, but even then, his upside's pretty limited. Darius Miller started last game. He's at 4,100. I think you can get 20 out of him, which is not a bad cash floor for Darius. And Finney Smith at 3,500. I don't really value his GPP or his tournament or his... What am I trying to find out? His DFS value. That's the word. Big man Julius Randle, 7,900. Has done very well against the Mavericks. In fact, he crushes them, averaging 48. I think he is a strong, strong option. DeAndre Jordan at 64. I'll fade that. While Jahlil Okafor at 33. Okafor's averaging 21 points the last three games in 15 minutes. And at 3,300, you could do a hell of a lot worse than putting him in there, hoping he gets 20. And that's 6x value right there for you from Jahlil Okafor. And I can't believe I'm saying that a 15-minute a night Jahlil Okafor could be an option. Tone Davis is at 11,800, one of the highest salaries on this slate. We know how good he is. We know he's putting up 65 a night, pretty much. And that's right on where he needs to be. His ability to exceed that can be tough, but you have a relative level of consistency with Davis that doesn't really come from many other guys. So I'm happy to go with him there, even though that price is elevated. Dirk, Kleber, Dwight Powell, I don't think we should be paying too much attention to them. On FanDuel, Davis is priced highly as well, 12,500, but a similar story. Julius Randle, love him at 85. Drew at 92 is maybe pushing it a bit high. Barnes at 6,000 looks much better on FanDuel than he does on DraftKings as well. And the same story goes for Jahlil Okafor at 3,700. He's got some of that value that, again, not many people would be really paying attention to. Denver Nuggets and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 3. The total is 213.5. Remember, the Nuggets are the best team in the Western Conference, but the Spurs are favorites. Does Vegas know something that we don't in this one? I guess that's always it's always worth mentioning when Vegas has a team that you don't expect to be favorite if something weird could be going on. We'll see. At point guard, Derek White's at 3,700. He had 26 last game. He looks settled. 26 points at 3,700 is value. I'm not fully ready to trust Popovich and his trust in Derek White, but it is worth mentioning that if you can get 26 out of a sub 4,000 price tag, then you're off to a pretty good start. The Blue Arrows at 6,300, Jamal Murray, he's putting up some strong numbers, a very good cash floor player. Monty Morris also at 46. His lowest score in his last five has been 26 points, and that is pretty bloody reliable, so happy to go with him. Brittany Forbes at 38, had some strong games, really just a tournament player, I think. On the wing, you're looking at DeMar DeRozan, who's down at 7,900. He had 54 last game. There's no reason DeMar can't get to 40. I don't think it's probably the most likely outcome. Therefore, with other value plays on DraftKings, I think that he is a bit of a fade. Torrey Craig, Marco Bellinelli, Uncle P, Nick Young, no. Lonnie Walker IV is active for the first time this season, but I don't think that he's going to be playing any sort of large part in the rotation for the San Antonio Spurs. I like Gay at 5,900, played well against Denver in the past. He's playing well this season. Happy with him. Trey Lyles, one show. And I don't really see the value there. And then on the big man side of things, Mason Plumlee's at 5,100. He's giving you 25 a night at the moment with 35-point upside, 40-point upside. He's going to start again most likely. I do like Mace there. Jakob Poeltl at 33 in that Jahlil Okafor type of mold. Get my 17, 18 points over 3,300 price tag. That's good enough to get some of those high-priced players in. And then you got Jokic at 9,600, who averages 52 against the Spurs the last three times out. He's averaging 52 his last five games in general, and he was ejected in one of those. So I think that he at 9,600 is strong. Bertans is a maybe a flyer, while LaMarcus Aldridge down at 7,200 because he's averaging under 30 points his last three. I think that he's got 36, 37-point value here, and that would make him a play, not a lock play, but a value play anyway. On FanDuel, I like Poeltl, I like Gay, I like Jokic. There's some value in Derek White, but it's lessened because of his $4,700 price tag. Plumlee at 63 also probably is a bit high. Jamal Murray and Aldridge at 78 and 76 are high, but I think Aldridge comes in as probably a better FanDuel play than what he is on DraftKings relative to everyone else. The last game of the day, the Sacramento Kings taking on the Clippers. The Clippers are 5-point favorites. The total is 236.5. The Kings could have some value here given the Clippers are 5.5-point favorites. Let's look at the point guards here. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's at 45. Really hard to trust him, although he did drop 38 on the Kings earlier this season. That would make him a tournament guy. Patrick Beverley, I think, is a fade. Well, De'Aaron Fox at 8,200. That's pretty high. Gilgeous-Alexander is quite a good defender. And the Clippers defending point guards can be quite tough. But with what Fox has been doing, you can't ignore him. I just don't think he's really a cash play. Well, Lou Williams has been up and down since he returned from his hamstring injury. But at 6,600, I think that he's strong. Like 30 points shouldn't be too much of a stretch for Lou to get to. Bogdan Bogdanovic is down at 5,500. He had 42 last game. I think that's a very good cash play, Bogdan Bogdanovic. Avery Bradley, no thank you. While Budrick Hield is up at 7,200. For good reason, he's been putting up massive numbers. Do you think he can continue to score 20 real-life points per game? I guess that should be question mark at that sort of a salary, but he is a GPP option, and you could consider him a cash guy as well. He's not a horrible option, clearly. Nemanja Bjelica is at 48. I'm not really feeling that one. The Rooster at 7,300, Danilo Gallinari. He's on a real run at the moment. Happy to go with him. Him and Bud at that 7,000 price tag are in a similar ballpark in terms of value, and it really, I guess, comes down to roster construction and your gut feel there. Well, Toby Harris at 78. He's averaging 43 over the last five. I'd take Hield and Gallinari over Harris, though, at this point. For the big man, Cauley Stein at 65. I love what Will's been doing lately. 41 over the last three. Happy with him. And the table, Montrezl Harrell. That's a nice $5,700 salary. I think that he is a good cash play here as well. And then you've got Gortat and Kufos, who can probably end up doing nothing. On FanDuel, value-wise, Cauley Stein, Harrell, Hield, Williams. I love Buddy over on FanDuel. 6,700 is a great, great option. 7,000 for Cauley Stein also looks good. I like Bogdanovic. I like Fox over there as well. Let's go through some stud and value plays. Now, on DraftKings, Vooch comes in at 8,900 as my stud. My value is Kyle Anderson. My stud play on FanDuel is Vucevic as well, and my value is Rowdy Rodions Kurucs. On Yahoo, my stud is Andre Drummond, and my value play is Mason Plumlee. And on DraftStars, my stud is Nick Vucevic, and my value play is Mason Plumlee. That'll wrap it up for a podcast. Hope you guys had a great Christmas, and you've had a safe and happy holidays as well. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble, and subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Follow the Locked On Podcast Network at LockedOnNBAnet as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Kyrie Irving.